evil scheme is now finished. You have broken the law, and now you must pay for your crimes. It's time to take you out to lunch.
I knew the Abnegator would catch that guy. He always does.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, Eugene.
He's my hero. He stands up for the little guy, the guy like me. He's the Abdicator, defender of the poor, the weak, the clumsy. He's the greatest.
Nice, Eugene, but you know, he's just a TV hero. I mean, he's not real.
Well, you're wrong, Gerald. He may be a TV hero, but he's real, all right. And he's going to be in our neighborhood tomorrow filming another episode of The Abdicator. I can't wait. Finally, I'll get to see my hero in action. When I grow up, I want to be just like him.
Ha! Like that's going to happen.
At least he has a dream, Gerald.
It's time to take you out to lunch.
It's time to take you out to lunch. He's my hero.
I'm coming in good. How you sounding?
Sounds all right on my end.
Yeah, you're coming in well here too. Okay, sweet. We can get to it.
All right. Power.
You.
Wilson.
Lou.
You are now tuned into the Comicidal Podcast, and this is the power of you in fiction.
I do have a salient memory of Encyclopedia Brown. If you remember that character, it was a sort of an adolescent novel series about a young boy who sort of solved mysteries through science, and I just thought that was so cool. That was so fascinating.
What up, what up? This is the power of you in fiction, and if you've been following us this long, we hope you know who. That's Wilson.
And he's Lou. That intro clip you heard was from the good doctor, Raymond Marr, and it may not have been as on the nose as some of our other clips, but stick with us, and I promise, it'll make sense.
Because today, we attempt to go where no man has gone before. Beyond the fabric of space-time, we are going to the future.
And since we stopped in the present to refuel last episode, this trip should be easy. Like Sunday morning, you know what I'm saying? The Commodores, Lionel Richie, that's all right. Today, we will be talking about aspirational characters. And since this is a well-worn theme, the DeLorean should be able to make this trip no problemo.
Actually, Wilson, hit the brakes. This may be a bit more of a problem than we thought.
That's weird, because I definitely thought this would be our easiest episode because of how much it seems to permeate the media. Like, kids and adults alike dress up as their favorite heroes at cons. With great power comes great responsibility. Is a quote that inspires people every day. R.I.P. Steve Ditko. What would Batman do is hella common phrase. And there's like mad memes of people posting what characters from their favorite anime, cartoon, and movie, like what those characters taught them. And I mean, real talk, I could easily give a 50-minute lecture on the teachings of Uncle Iroh. So, yeah, easy peasy.
Right, so it's definitely universal, and it's definitely been seen anecdotally all over the place. However, you know, we like to add that academic heft to what we say, so I hit the books. First, I decided to try to hit the nail on the head and see if I could find any research on the effect of fictional characters on the goals and aspiration of people at different phases in lives.
Word. What you find?
Nothing.
Dang, like nothing at all. But didn't Dr. Marr give us some links from other people's studies that overlap with psychology and fiction?
Yeah, but none of them hit the exact thing we're trying to touch on today.
Wow, that's wild, man.
Crazy, right? So the next thing I looked into was the effect that role models have on people's aspirations. And there was some research there. Female leadership raises aspirations and educational poverty aspirations and the economic the effects support. Of television role models on their career aspirations of African American
superstars and me
predicting the impact of role models
motivation by positive or negative role models
regulatory focus determines who will
self-efficacy beliefs as shapers of children's
career success
career
the role of teenage career aspirations ambitions
and a lot of the research was good but they mainly boiled down to career and economic aspirations in relations to almost exclusively gender, race, and class. So even though all these things intersect with what we're talking about, I want to continue this narrative we've been spinning that's really been about building a better human. Sure, career aspirations and possibilities will all be touched on, but it omits some of the characteristics that are at the core of humanity. The tenacity, the compassion, the mindfulness, the love. All these things are a part of human experience and things that we find important. Thus, they're part of our aspirations.
I dig. So, if the 1985 DeLorean ain't gonna do the trick, what's the plan, Sam?
The Chronologger.
Wait, the what?
So, remember Ben 10 Alien Force?
Right. Developed by the main man, Dwayne McDuffie.
So, remember the time machine that Professor Paradox used to give him his wacky powers?
The Chronologger is hardly a time machine in the sense of a vehicle, but rather a subatomic drill designed to bore a tunnel in the fabric of space-time.
Professor Paradox? But you're not even real.
A common error of the parochial mind. There's always more to reality than one imagines.
Hold up, Blue. What we got going on here?
I wish I could tell you this was a joke, but what I think I'm about to tell you is that Professor Paradox is saying he has entered our mic session from another reality.
Well, I have to admit it. I'm impressed. I'm about to warn you not to go through with this plan of yours.
But I haven't explained my plan yet.
I sincerely hope you'll reconsider. There's an old saying in my field. Time travel is for immortals and fools.
Okay, but hear me out. You do understand the importance of fiction, right?
It is the source of the universe's greatest power. It's where ideas become real.
Then you must understand the importance of letting our listeners know about it. Besides, I plan to use the Chronologger more as a window and don't plan on traveling through it myself.
Good luck all!
So, you're free to watch us go down this path, but Wilson and I are about to use this Chronologger. Professor, are you still there? Wilson, are you still there?
Yeah, bro. I'm here.
So did we lose to Professor?
I don't know what game you're playing, but if that was the Professor, he kind of comes and goes as he pleases.
True.
So tell me how you plan on walking through this, man.
So you know the 6-step critical thinking model that we bring up from time to time?
Word. The one with the lines.
Right, that's the exact one. What I want to do is track the development of critical thoughts in humans in order to postulate why we even need fictional role models.
Ooh, I like where you're going with this.
Bet. All right, so for the first part, listeners, I want to walk you through the first 3 steps and stages of this evolution. Wilson, if you remember the metaphor, you can give the listeners your interpretation.
Got you.
Step 1 is knowledge. Being able to identify and remember information.
That's reading the lines.
Uh-huh.
Being able to see those weird little squiggles that's on a page and translating them into sounds and speech that we use every day.
Right. Step 2 is comprehension.
Understanding the lines.
Yep. This step is all about taking those words that you understand and organizing them to communicate the big picture that's being presented in your own words. And step 3, which we are going to spend a bit of time on, is application.
Oh yeah, interpreting the lines, taking those ideas that you're able to understand in step 2 and being able to apply them in other places.
Exactly. This thing we're talking about is universal, and I want to be able to communicate how it permeates every aspect of our lives. But first, we'll give our listeners a moment to chew on that and slide to this first commercial break. Hey, Wilson, you know how we be saying like nerds and hip hop overlap all of the time? Yep. And have always overlapped? Yo, so I was on my Enter the 36 Chambers today, and we were singing something that made me realize that we gotta sort of open up the gates. Cash rules everything around me. Cream gets the money. Dollar bill, yo. Well, I'm sorry, listeners, but we're trying to get better. We're trying to get a producer in this joint. We're trying to do more, but the cream is stopping us. So what we hoping is that you love the content we give you as much as we like making it, and we started a Patreon.
Yeah, we did. We definitely did. And the Patreon is www.patreon.com/commicidalpodcast, all one word.
Now, you don't have to donate a buckload of money. Every little bit counts. We're a small operation, and we've been sort of doing this out of our own pockets for a while, and it's taken us a lot for this to ask, but we can't support getting better without your help.
Facts. So if y'all are coffee drinkers or tea drinkers, because, you know, Luke Cage kind of ruined coffees for some people, consider skipping that coffee or tea on one of those weekdays to work and dropping a little bit in the commicidal bucket. We would greatly appreciate it. As Lou said, every little bit counts. As the Woo said, cash rules everything around me. Cream, dollar bill, y'all. As Wyclef John said, I'm going to tell you, like Woo told me. All right, I'm going a little too far. But we do appreciate y'all if you consider the commicidal podcast a mainstay in your rotation. And if you really enjoy the content, then we really, really, really would love your patronage.
So, I want to start at the beginning of life. The moment we emerge triumphantly into the world, we start to develop an understanding of it. I believe one of the first things a child learns, even if they don't have the language to express it, is that they are human. Which I know sounds pretty basic, but we're talking about people who are just developing an understanding of the world. That there's this knowledge bit, and where I want us to direct our attention to is stage one. So, moving to stage two, this comprehension of our humanity, we learn pretty early on that one day we will in fact grow into bigger humans, like our guardians. And as early as preschool, children receive questions such as, what do you want to be when you grow up? Don't you want to grow up big and strong like your old man? Now, a child still in stage one might just name something they like. Give us an adorable answer like, I want to be a dog or a tree when I grow up. But for a child to give a proper response to the question, they must first interpret that they are going to grow up into this adult human being. Now that response brings us to stage three, application. This is where things may get a little more complex. With limited time, relationships, and knowledge of the world, how does a kid decide what they will be when they're older? I would think that we show them the world through story. Books and movies and TV shows, all showing children wonderful things about the world and giving them these models of what grown-ups look like. These models allow children to dream of a life that they may live in the future and set aspirations. So what I'm trying to convey here is fiction is one of the primary tool sets through which young children begin to set aspirations for themselves beyond direct experience.
I hear you. And I remember when we were outlining this one, you said you wanted it to feel universal. So I took the DeLorean away, and I got a few surprises lined up for you myself. I put out an all call to all our friends of the show.
Everybody?
Well, not everyone. But we have a lot of voices that should sound familiar. I also found one piece of academic research that may tie into this idea you're putting forth.
Okay, so clip me first to get us going and then move us into the paper.
Cool. So first, I want to talk about Jerome Walford, founder of Horde Comics and creator of Nowhere Man, which we did a rare on. Check that out, y'all. And the Guan Anthology, which was a source of our Wild Guan Wednesdays.
My name is Jerome Walford with Forward Comics. One of the more impactful experiences I've had is a short-lived animated series following the Silver Surfer that aired during the late 90s, I think it was. I just remember being awestruck by how relatable and how connected I felt to him, certainly because of his personality, but also because of the way he looked. And up until that point, it just never occurred to me that the Silver Surfer could actually be someone that we would characterize as being a minority here. And as a young kid, you know, certainly I loved other stories that, you know, were very popular, Spider-Man, Batman, whatever, and some of the other really cool, gritty characters that grew up in, quote-unquote, the hood. But, you know, there was something just really captivating about this character that was beyond all that, outside of all that. And it helped me to realize that the power that we have in fiction is to help to imagine ourselves in a context where a lot of those struggles, a lot of those challenges that come from being sort of marginalized or characterized in a certain way, that we could rise above it.
Okay, there was a lot packed into that statement. When Jerome was young, he recognized he was physically different, but a lot of depictions of black people he saw in the mediums which he consumed story were not like him. So Jerome found a hero clad in chrome and found the power cosmic.
Word. And all right, so Jerome obviously first consumes the cartoon Silver Surfer, and he then understands that, okay, Silver Surfer is different than most of the people in the cartoon, right? He's silver, obviously. That's a distinct difference.
Different from most people in the galaxy.
Even in the galaxy. And Jerome understands that in his environment, he is seen differently physically than maybe the majority of people he's interacting with. So he realizes that, oh, okay, Silver Surfer is different, but he's pretty cool and awesome. He's able to do these amazing things. And he's a grown-up, or he looks like a grown-up. That means when I grow up, I can probably do these cool and awesome things, even though I'm not super-powered.
Right.
Or I don't have cosmic powers, for real. I wonder if that's the same thing, superpowered and cosmic power.
I don't know. Maybe we can go ask Galactus.
Yeah.
But that's cool. That's a cool way to set yourself up, because we've got this humanoid thing and you've picked out somebody with cosmic power. You're setting yourself up for endless possibilities pretty early. So even if Jerome didn't see reflections of himself in these other characters, he picked somebody who can do pretty much anything. And he was shiny. Yeah, I'm very with that pick. So, who you got for me next?
Next, we've got one of our blurred of the Midwest who didn't leave the Midwest. LaCase Perry from the fine state of Kansas, and her adventures with the Raider of the Lost Ark.
Ah, so she wanted to grow up to be the guy that brought a gun to the sword fight.
Yeah, sort of, kinda. But I don't think that's what she was going for when she made the pick.
A piece of my heart will always belong to Indiana Jones because I learned so much about adventure and bravery from the character as a child. Unless you consider milking cows exciting, there wasn't much for a Kansas kid like me to look forward to beyond the world of cinema. So I would rotate the first three movies through our old VCR, glued to Harrison Ford, whipping his way around the globe, saving the day. Until I discovered more characters I could identify with in practical ways, Indiana Jones was my blueprint for who I wanted to be. He was stubborn, in the best way, unwilling to fold to the forces of evil, in his case Nazis, hell-bent on tearing the world apart. He was practical, he was funny, and he was afraid of snakes like me. Even better, he was a nerd. He taught me I could see the world if I was willing to try. On the surface, he and I have absolutely nothing in common, but what's remarkable about the arts is how even across the boundaries of the physical world, we can be inspired to do great things. I didn't become an archaeologist, but I've held tight to the lessons I learned from Indy as a little girl, and I've done my best to live a life I'm proud of. So now I try to run forward when my gut is urging me to turn around, just like Indy would.
Okay, so even before Storm, Indy was really into some nerdy things, but he stayed fly while doing it.
That's a bingo. So this seems like a good time to loop in that paper I was talking about. Because if we assume Jerome and LaCase were a little older than six, then this case you're presenting seems to have some backup, bro.
Bet.
Right. So the title of the paper is He Swings on Buildings, That's Why He's My Role Model. It's authored by Mary Chow Bonneville. She's a grade school teacher in the Vancouver School District. Karen Kozar, she's a research teacher in East Vancouver. Kathy Hussey, computer and guided reading teacher in the Vancouver School District. And Kimberly Patrick, a teacher of deaf and hard of hearing students in Surrey, British Columbia. And the paper was featured on Educational Insights, which is an electronic journal sponsored by the Faculty of Education at the University of British Columbia. And the way they did the research is, since each author are teachers, they did surveys within their classrooms with student groups. So, you know, their
academics.
Yeah. Yes. So, one of the main points of the paper that I actually wanted to pull out and, you know, talk about a little bit is this excerpt that says, "Heroes exert profound influence on individuals and even entire civilizations. For children, heroes with their accompanying myths and legends are part of the material from which their dreams and dramas are derived. Playing out these hero themes is one of the ways in which children come to understand their society and their own role within that society."
Huh. Would you look at that? Canadian academia really seems agreeable with what we've been putting together this series, huh?
For real. And I'm glad. Makes it sound like we got some sense.
Swag. So, who else you got for me?
That's about all I got, unless you want to talk about the stone that the builder refused.
Word. You interviewed Bushmaster?
Not Lou. How am I supposed to get a statement from Bushmaster on his fictional aspirational role models? And by the by, those accents for season 2, not good.
But look, if Professor Paradox can come hop on my mic, anything is possible.
Okay, Lou. Why don't we go to break and give you a moment to pull yourself together?
I'm just saying.
Hey, what's going on, Comicidal Podcast fans, esteemed listeners out there? So, if you all have been enjoying the Poyif special with the riveting stories that we hope we are telling you, we would greatly appreciate if you all rated us on iTunes or on your podcast listening device if you don't use Apple products.
Yeah, really, we need these ratings to pop up in the recommended podcast section. Get it in ears that you don't know or can't interact with directly. So if you want to keep us alive, go ahead and click star number 5.
Yeah, so, damn, you know, that was actually really good. That was actually a good end. I don't got nothing else for it.
Okay, break, whatever. Wilson knows it was just jokes.
Look, bro, just had to make sure before I continue.
All right. So in addition to the critical thinking model presented, this episode has a character linchpin that would be no other than an original member of the Homicidal Pantheon, Rejected Stone.
Right. We originally tapped him to explore his notorious love of Batman. But as we got into it, right, we ended up walking through his life and different fictional characters that have helped him identify how he wanted to move through said life.
And where I want to start, because I knew what we were talking about, is Storm and Artemis Fowl.
Yeah, that's not a bad place to start.
When is the first time you saw yourself in a fictional character? What character was that? How did it make you feel? And how were you changed henceforth?
First time. I think, what is a deep cut? Artemis Fowl, I think, was one of the first characters that was kind of super. His power, his quote unquote power, was that he was smart. So I was always a kid that wasn't. I was kind of athletic. I was super nerdy. I wasn't cool. The only thing that made me kind of exceptional was that I was kind of smart.
Right.
So when I found that book, to me, that was, you know, he had a butler who was strong and talented and could fight and do all that kind of stuff. But the star of the series was really a kid who was young and immature, but also kind of smart and wise beyond his years. And so that was something that I think in fourth or fifth grade, I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of dope. Kind of dope, and I think that was kind of what made me okay with being smart. Like that could be your thing. You didn't have to be smart and something else. You could just be smart, and that could be your thing. That could make you exceptional. Yeah, because like I was like one of those kids who got like I got bullied and all that kind of stuff. So it was like I felt like I was always trying to be cool. Like I was trying to figure out what is that thing that makes you cool. And so, especially where I grew up, like. Being smart wasn't cool. It was, you know, the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. So you could try to be cool by listening to the right music. You could try to be cool by wearing the right clothes. And really, my parents weren't the type who really cared about any of that. So they weren't having it. Like, I got to buy Dickies now because you don't want to wear Dockers because people don't think it's cool. They weren't down with that. So there were certain things that I couldn't change. And I kind of just found myself in this gap space where I was like, oh, okay, all right, I'm just gonna be the person on the outside. And kind of reading this book made me come to the point where like, all right, I don't even really want to be the kind of cool that these people are. It made me kind of step outside of their approval. And then I was just like, all right, no, I just want to be smart, like, because that's mad cool. Look at how cool this dude is. He's smarter than all the other people in the book. And so they might look at him from their perspective and they don't think he's cool. They don't think he's a force to be reckoned with. But the whole time, he knows better than them that he's the one that's got it all figured out. And so it made me like mad cocky. But it's kind of things like that that I think now as an adult, there's very few things that shake me because I don't generally care about many people's opinion. So I think, you know, being in engineering and kind of being the only one in that group and now being at work and kind of being, you know, like now I'm just kind of like, yeah, no, like I know I'm popping. I don't really need anybody else to confirm that for me. So he was one of the first people that I think was like cocky to the point where he was like, yeah, I'm going to just do me and I don't really care what you do or what you think of me because I got it. I know I got it.
Okay, so what's very interesting here is Stone at the beginning sees Artemis Fowl and sees a reflective character pretty early, because the one thing he can identify about himself as a young age, when you've only consider a couple of character traits, is he was smart. And he found this detective dude in this book who was smart, and not only helped him come to terms with who he was being picked on, but he was able to move from reflection into application and say, yo, I want to be like Artemis Fowl, because he's smart like I'm smart, but he owns it. And not only does he own it, he hones that intelligence and makes it his superpower. So I want to be like Artemis Fowl when I grow up and adapt those smarts.
Yeah. And one of the cool things about that is it's making me think a little bit more about the inflection point from the research paper that I just mentioned. And in fact, we jump maybe even a little bit further along the lines, right? Because Stone starts to take into account his image and how that image of smartness, right? The primary image of smartness is being perceived by others. And then he began to incorporate all of that into his role model selection.
I can see it. And that also leads us rather nicely into the next step of critical thinking development, analysis.
That's reading between the lines, y'all.
Yep. So 12-year-old Stone, this age, I think middle school-ish, might be around the time where you start seeing fiction for more than all the little pieces that the plot deals with directly. So while before, you might just be looking at a simple tone, follow the plot, see a moral, 12 is around the time you start looking at things that aren't directly said, that are themes that are dealt with.
That takes me back. Or is it forward? It's so hard to tell. Have we met? Have we met yet?
Yeah, Professor. You sort of crashed in at the beginning of the episode.
Have a gumball. It'll calm your nerves.
Actually, I think I'm going to take you up on that.
Lou, Professor, I need y'all to focus. We still have a lot of ground to cover.
Whatever you do, you better do it quickly. Time is running out.
Huh. Sounds to me like we should take a little break, chat with the professor, make this a multi-parter.
I guess we can do that. But at least tell the listeners what we're going to be doing on part two.
Right. So next time, I want to take a deeper dive into stage four and stay there a while and make a move towards stage five.
I can dig it. There's a lot of Stone to unpack there. And I think you'll love the bit of continuity we picked up from Ellie. But Lou, what about stage six?
That goes with some of stage five in part three.
We didn't discuss a three-parter, bro. How much time are we going to be spending on this here? And I like the DeLorean so much more than I like the Chronologger. I really do like the DeLorean so much. I only have to do two parts with the DeLorean. Two parts.
Okay, Liam, hit it.
Next time on The Power of You in Fiction, join your favorite time-traveling hosts as they chat with Professor Paradox, take a deep dive into Stage 4, then make a move towards Stage 5, and you won't believe your ears as they unpack everything Stone said and pick up some continuity from Ellie. Next time on The Power of You in Fiction, anything is possible.
This has been the Comicidal Podcast, where our goal is to bring you a higher class of comic analysis. Peace.
Peace.